Hi, guys. I'm fantasy author J.H. Fleming.
And I'm science fiction and fantasy author Philip Dreher Duncan. We have a very special guest with us this evening who is not an author named Paul Lafferty, but instead our dear friend Paula Lafferty, who, when I was looking up her bio today, I accidentally stumbled on a man named Paul Lafferty, who I was very confused because I thought it said Paula. And this person's book was about their time being a bouncer at a strip club in Niagara Falls, New York. And I was like, she did what? This is crazy. And she was a DJ. And then I realized there was an A missing off of Paul. So actually, we're talking to Paula Lafferty, who, so far as I know, was never a bouncer at a strip club. But she did just run.
Adding it to my list of dreams and goals. My goodness.
She did just run a killer Kickstarter, and she's a TikTok star, and she's our friend. Hello, Paula.
Hi. Wow, my goodness. What a thing to live up to. I don't think I can match up to the esteem of the strip club author. Strip club bouncer author? Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm.
That's a lot. When I saw the cover, it was like a pole dancer, and I was like, that seems like a weird cover for Paula to have. And then I was like, what is this?
My Arthurian fantasy adventure with pole dancing.
Arthurian pole dancing.
Who knows what Vera was up to, you know, right before she got
it's
pulled
a very,
back.
Very different take on things.
Why don't you tell us about your book that's not about being a bouncer at a strip club?
It's not. It is short a number of strip clubs, but it's called La Vida Guinevere, which is kind of a play on. So the first full telling of the Arthurian story is La Mort d'Arthur, written in the, 1400s, 1500s by Thomas Malory. And it, funny enough, the title was always in French. The book was always in English, which gave me permission to also make my title in French and my book in English. But it's about Vera, who is living her ordinary present day life when she finds out she is actually from the 7th century and she's the legendary Queen Guinevere. So you've got time travel and magic and romance and adventure, and it's just a whole barrel of monkeys.
Awesome. Now, I know you've completed the Kickstarter now, correct?
Correct, yes.
Do you have a tentative release date?
Yeah, the release date is October 29th.
Oh, nice.
So I did it with a lot of lead time because I wanted to do an offset print run. And mm-hmm. in order to make all of the I's dotted and the T's crossed, I needed every minute of the time between now and then. So this was all orchestrated out like last October, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. So, Paula Lafferty villain origin story, because, and honestly, I thought to add this in as a question for you after I saw Paul Lafferty, because I was like, well, I got really excited. I'm like, well, what made her want to write books? And then when I realized that, but I still want to know what's your villain origin story? What led you to the path of pursuing writing?
Oh God, villain origin story. That's so great. It's hard. I'm trying to think of like the earliest time I knew I wanted to write because it blends mm-hmm. in with the, I don't know. I don't really remember a time when I didn't want to be telling stories. So I was mm-hmm. really little when I decided I wanted to write stories. And I have a lot of false starts and stops. Actually, we're in the room where there is the graveyard of my old journals. If this was a video mm-hmm. podcast, I would show you all. I mean, there's like... Uh-oh, sorry, we had a dog intrusion. He's really cute.
Uh-oh, but... dogs are always welcome on the podcast, here, as a rule.
Oh, look
at the puppy.
Sweet boy. All right, now go on now, buddy. Sorry, I had to get my martini. Priorities.
Martini delivery.
Okay, back to it.
It's fine.
Okay, cool. So yeah, I don't really remember a time I didn't want to write, and I did what so many of us do. I started mm-hmm. stories incessantly. You know, ideas were they were not few and far between. They were plentiful every day, and I would start mm-hmm. little snippets of stories and then give up on them within two chapters worth. And that was something that kind of came with me all through life. I was never able to complete anything more than like, you know, 20, 30 page short stories. And then, like, I don't know, something just kind of clicked. I was having dinner with a friend who's in his 70s, and he mentioned that he'd always wanted to write a book. And he still someday hoped to write this book that he had a beautiful plot lined out for. And after that night, I was like, I'm going to start writing every day and just see what happens. And like, sometimes it was just, I am writing today because I promised myself I would. And that was all I wrote that day. Mm. But that led to repicking up this story idea that I stumbled on in 2009. And I just didn't stop. And so, I don't know, there's nothing that has felt better than living into that dream in this really big way. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And that was very well put.
Right. I was going to say that sounded a lot like my own. Like, I had the same thing where I'd have, you know, notebooks with different stories or novels that I'd started. And I didn't actually finish my first one until I actually majored in creative writing in college, and I took a novel writing class. And that was the only assignment, really, was to finish your first draft by the end of the semester. So that was my first novel that I finished.
That's brilliant. Because, like, that was what I was just thinking about that while I was talking. I went to film school, and so I was writing a lot of short screenplays. And those were the longest projects I finished, you know, 20, 30 page scripts. And right. It was only because if I didn't do it, I would fail.
Right, like, exactly. It's like, I have to do this.
Right. So yeah, finding the drive and the wherewithal to do it with just self-imposed deadlines of like, nobody else is going to know. Nobody else is going to give a shit. Oh, nobody else is going to care. If I don't, nobody else is going to care if I don't finish this book. But I'm going to know and I'm going to care.
Right.
Yeah, that's totally fair. So what led you to the TikTok? Was it intentionally as like a writing promotional thing, or had you already started doing stuff there? And then it just, as you started writing, that kind of came into it.
So yeah, TikTok actually went hand in hand with refinding that drive to write. So I joined, like many people did, during the dark days of the pandemic, when I just wanted to scroll and find a quick hit of serotonin. and I guess after, I don't know, 6 months or so of just lurking around on the app, I stumbled into the book side of things, which was really fun. I was getting all these great book recommendations and finding some absolutely stellar fan fictions that it felt like I was stealing to be reading these books for these fan fictions for free. And then I stumbled onto the author part of things and all of these people who just had like had these dreams to write their whole lives. And then finding those things coming to fruition. And I saw these communities that had developed amongst authors on this app and the way they supported each other and helped sell each other's books. Yeah, it was kind of a part of the awakening back to writing. And then once I started the book, I got like 70 pages in before I made my first video about it, because then I was like, oh, this is real. This is happening. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of, I don't know, it didn't snowball. It was really slow going at first. And then I got really, I made a cool video, and I also got really lucky, that magic combination, and it went just bonkers viral and change things for me on the platform.
So then what made you decide to go the Kickstarter route?
Yeah. So initially, I mean, a lot of it was finding. So, okay, let me back up a minute. Like, via both TikTok and Instagram, partly because of that video that went kind of viral. Mm-hmm. It cost a lot kind of, it went very viral and it grew my following really fast. But it wasn't necessarily all people who were interested in the book. It was people who liked that one video. And so they weren't necessarily like super engaged. And so it like spent the next year or so really cultivating, trying to figure out like, okay, who's actually interested in this book, and trying to like get engagement and get people involved and excited. Mm-hmm. But then there was enough people that I was kind of standing at this crossroads of, I queried a little before the manuscript was ready. And then I pulled it because I decided more editing was needed. And then I don't know, something just hit me. And I was like, I don't know that I want to traditionally publish this. Like, if I have access to all of these readers. And
yeah, you already did the hardest part.
And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I got lucky. And then the good stuff happened, and community was built, which was amazing. And So yeah, after that point, it was sort of like I found the community. And now a matter of figuring out if I felt like I could do all of the things to make the book the best it could be and to make it the most professional quality it could be. And then I had this harebrained idea where I was like, oh my God, what if I made a really, really, really pretty edition of it? What if I did that? And so that was the idea for the deluxe edition and thinking like, hey, maybe I can actually make this happen because I have enough people on board to sort of swing for it. And then that sort of spiraled into like, okay, well, how do people even make these beautiful editions of books? I know they're not getting them through Ingram Spark or through KDP. Like,
right. So
where are they getting them? And so kind of just going down the rabbit hole of figuring out all of the things about an offset print run and of like, oh, hey, you can also print your other books this way. But yeah, figuring out that the more you print, the cheaper it is per copy and the more options you have. Of course, that requires having an audience to sell to. And then the next question was, okay, well, how, like, even a really great offset print run that's reasonable is going to cost a minimum of $10,000, like $8,000 to $10,000. Mm-hmm. So how do people do that? And then I stumbled on Kickstarter, and I'd known it existed, but I didn't realize how prevalent it was for folks to do offset print runs specifically of super beautiful deluxe editions of books. Oh my gosh, there are so many on there. It's mind-blowing.
We'll definitely get into some more of the nuances of that, because TikTok and Kickstarter are both blind spots for us, like, completely, right? So we'll get into more of that.
Sure.
What would be your advice for newbies? And it can be craft or business, or
both. Oh gosh, like in any way, shape, or like about all of the realms of it, writing and Kickstarter and TikTok.
Yeah, if somebody, this is your opportunity to have the dinner with the 70-year-old man, right? So what if there's somebody listening who is thinking about it, has always thought about it, but they've never done it, or maybe they have started? What would your advice for them be?
Yeah. Okay. For somebody, if this is somebody who hasn't written the book yet, I think for me, the very biggest thing is get yourself out of your way and do whatever you have to do to get yourself to keep writing. Because we all come against the same mental, emotional roadblocks of we come up with a story that we love and that we think is brilliant. And then we start working on it and we get deep enough into it that we convince ourselves it is trash. And we are trash. What were we thinking all along? And those things are generally lies. I mean, sometimes they feel true because first drafts are rough. But like, I ended up breaking so many rules about what people say you're supposed to do for draft one. And that ended up being the key to finishing draft one. You know, I'd heard people say like, oh, don't share anything you've written until draft one is completely done. And that had never worked for me before. And so I was sharing it with a little group of people and talking about it on TikTok and finding community there. Like, however you need to motivate yourself to keep going, just keep going. Just keep putting one foot in front of the other, because something that is incredibly imperfect on paper is 100% better than something that only ever lives in your head. And the feeling of meeting your dream and being able to actually do the thing that you've dreamed of doing your whole life. Oh my gosh. You guys know there's no high like that. There's nothing that compares.
Yeah. It's way better to have a bad book you wrote than to have no book you wrote.
It for sure is. Yep.
And I can say that with the experience of writing several bad books.
Bad books are the start of good books. I don't think we get good books without first writing bad books.
I think that's 100% accurate. Mm-hmm. All right. So we are going to intentionally save going deeper into TikTok and Kickstarter for our later segments. So we will pause here and do the news.
All right.
All right. For our first news story tonight, writer beware wants us to be aware. Impersonation scams are the biggest threat at the moment. Apparently, the most common scams that they want us to look out for are people impersonating publishers, agents, movie companies, things like that. And then, you know, being like, hey, I'll publish your book if you give me some money. I'm pretty sure we're all smart enough to avoid it, but just in case, they might get slightly more clever, right?
I have seen some slightly more clever versions of this.
Yeah.
On the TikTok. Yeah. One gal I know, and she's a sharp, savvy gal but she had an author who she was a fan of, but who's not like uber famous, mm-hmm. who has an Instagram and then befriended her on TikTok and was messaging her about like writing and stuff and talked about this service that she really loves and got that author to buy into this service. Oh, no. So it wasn't like pretending to be a publishing company. It was just like, oh my gosh, this amazing, I don't remember what it was, editorial service or whatever it was. And it was full on a scam. And it obviously wasn't mm-hmm. that author, but it was just like subtle enough.
That's so devious.
It was so devious. And I heard from a number of people who were like, oh, I'm friends with that author too. And she had mentioned that author in quotes, and she had mentioned that program, but she hadn't been like super pushy about it. And so they hadn't thought anything of it.
Wow. That's crazy. So be careful, people.
I guess all you can do there is just really do your research, ask other people if they've heard of whatever it is they're trying to push onto you.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and honestly, like mm-hmm. the Writer Beware blog, probably everyone should be poking their head in there occasionally. I think they actually have a way you can sign up to get emails. Probably worth your time.
Well, I should yep. do that. That's good stuff.
Yeah. And to JH with the fun one.
Oh, yeah. So I guess the new trend for millennials and Gen Z are joining book clubs. A report from CNN says that book club event listings grew 24% in 2023. So that's cool.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Isn't it?
I was going to say, I have kind of like a love-hate relationship with book clubs because on the one hand, I really like the idea of them. But on the other hand, it's like, I want to read the books I want to read. And so if I have to read something else because it's part of the book club, then like, I don't know, my brain resists it. It's like, no, I want to read these other books.
I thought for sure you were going to say, I love the idea of it, but I hate people. So, eh.
It depends on the people.
You have to find like your perfect book club unit. My sister has this magical Great. Book club. I think there's like five of them and they're all just simpatico. And they read great books that just resonate with all of them. And I think that might be the nice. Key.
That is cool.
Yeah. Need to find someone else who reads all the same things I read mm-hmm. or want to read.
Someone was telling us when we were at Superstars. Oh, possible it might be a future guest. Someone was telling us about a book club that while they were traveling, they got to visit. And it's this like special book club that's been around for like 100 years. And they have a cap on members, and the only way to get in is if someone passes away. So they keep like a waiting list.
Stop it.
Yeah. But they have rules, right? Going back 100 years where it's like they can only serve water, coffee, and something else because they didn't want it to get too fancy. They wanted it to be like a certain level of whatever. And so, yeah, they've held these rules for like 100 years or something.
Wow.
Yeah. I think I remember. I'll ask when we have that guest on if that was them that told me that story. Pretty sure it was. Could be wrong. So I won't say anything while we're recording, like right now.
Yeah, good call.
All right. Our next news story, which will be near and dear to Paula's heart. TikTok yes. is in the news this week at a national level because the House just did a vote in favor of a bill. It won 362-65 in a bill which demands that TikTok be sold from the Chinese company ByteDance or the app will be banned in the United States. So the House passed their bill, and I guess now it goes on to the Senate. It is a strangely bipartisan effort. Both the donkeys and the elephants were voting together on this one, which is...
I'm so glad this is what they can agree on. So glad. So glad.
And they're citing security concerns around personal data and U.S. data and how TikTok could be used to potentially manipulate upcoming elections, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. This is an interesting one in a lot of ways. I will let Paula take the lead on giving her thoughts.
Oh, God, I just have so many big feelings about it. I mean, just for one, talking about influencing elections coming up, it's like, why are we zoning in on TikTok as being the issue here? Like, mm-hmm. why is Meta not on the chopping block at the moment? Why is X not on the chopping block?
It's not like either of them have a history of... of bad right, information.
Not like they've ever proven to promote false information or to allow interference from foreign governments creating advertisements. Not like they've done any of that. Oh my God. So, I mean, I'm fine with if we've got some security concerns that need addressing, which the interesting thing that elected officials have said after the effects when people are mad at them are like, well, we know things that we can't tell you yet. And I don't know. I just like that as a constituent is not really something that I can vote on.
Yeah.
And that's not really something that holds meaning to me. So like if there are legitimate security concerns, like either tell us or I don't know. So I can respect if there are legitimate security concerns, but I don't know. It just the way they've gone about this of trying to do divestment from ByteDance, which is not even an entirely Chinese owned entity. It's also largely, so it's like it has Chinese ownership as well as foreign individual ownership, as well as employee ownership, which includes people across the entire globe. So just the gross misunderstanding of what China divesting from TikTok means is really unfortunate. And the congressional, I mean, I haven't heard anything from the Senate yet, but the congressional misunderstanding of what TikTok is to people is really unfortunate as well. I mean, there are 7 million small businesses in America alone operating on TikTok because it's a great way to access consumers. And personally, of course, it's not all about me, but personally, my kickstart of my author career happened on TikTok. So this is a lot of people's, not just fun and entertainment. This is a lot of people's livelihoods and businesses and their access to their audiences. So I got a lot of big opinions, but who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, I think I hear something in the background.
Yep, we've got a train.
We got a train. I guess it's my opinions will wait. It's time for a instead of my opinions, have a train ad. It'll be more fun, I promise.
Are you tired of overly long, complicated, and pretentious reading material? Annoyed with meandering plots and words that make you reach for a dictionary? What you need is a staycation with the ongoing series The Blade Mage, a fast-paced urban story where elements of sci-fi and fantasy meet mystery and take you on an adventure, always through the scenic route. Worried about price? Not to fret. There's not a $5 word in The Blade Mage. So head over to Amazon and start your adventures with Wyatt, courtesy of author Philip Dreyer Duncan.
Best train ad ever, I'm willing to bet, because I don't know which one I'm going to pluck in there. I'm certainly not going to make you people a new one. I probably should. I won't. Anyway, TikTok. Waited this whole time to share my thoughts on the TikTok. I will say I didn't love the like privacy stuff with TikTok. I don't know what that looks like today because it's been a while since I looked at it. But a part of me, the very cynical part of me is like, is this really just the fact that it's like the biggest social media platform now and it's not US based, so we don't like it? I don't know. Part of me, I don't know.
I don't think that's without merit.
I have trust issues.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, and then there's the like, on the security side of things, even if that is a concern, like, don't I, as an individual, get to decide what security risks I'm willing to take with my data?
Yeah. Well, I think, and I think it goes to the point you said, like, if there is something, well, then just tell me what it is, and then I can decide for myself, right?
Yeah, and if there is an issue of national security, okay, like, tell us.
Yeah, what is it?
You can't just say, just trust me. Like, I don't trust you, actually.
You don't have to tell us how, but you have to tell us what.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. But of course, I am biased on this issue, and I will readily admit that. I love this app. I find a lot of joy there, and I also have a lot of foundation of my career there.
Sure. All right. JH.
Moving on. All right. So Spotify. So apparently when you have a release, like for an album or a song on Spotify, they have a countdown timer on the page. So they are now adding that to audiobooks, which is pretty cool.
That is cool.
Oh.
Yeah. So if you're waiting on your favorite author's next release, if there's an audiobook on Spotify, you can get a cool little countdown timer, tell you exactly when it's out.
That's interesting.
Yeah. All right, JH. It's your turn. I did it last time, but you have to do a crazy voice like me. Mm-hmm.
In our continued coverage of our robot overlords.
That wasn't that crazy.
It was a robot voice. Shush.
Was it? All right. Sounded like your sultry singing voice.
No.
So the Publishers Association has sent a letter to AI developers on behalf of its 180 publishers, including the big trad publishers, basically a letter stating that we are withholding all permissions for any of our works to be used as training data for AI developers. Might be a little late for that letter to go out, but...
For sure.
They did put that. I don't know why now it seems weird, but they did it. I don't know what it'll do for them, but that's your AI news. I don't know.
Man, that's such a weird topic.
Yeah.
We're in the wild west of AI right now. There are there's just like no laws about what's acceptable and what's not.
And it's going to take time for them to sort through all of that. The chaos will continue. Honestly, like, not that I would generally feel bad for a giant corporation, but I feel a little bad for the people at Amazon who are having to deal with like you have like a normal job and you're like, your job is to do this, this, and this. And then for the last like 8 months, it's just like, find the books that are causing the chaos. Find the ones pretending to be other authors. Find the ones. Get them gone. That's a good point.
Nope.
Yeah, this can't be fun. Can't be fun being on the KDP quality control team right now.
Mm-mm. No, thank you. Pass.
All right. Well, that was our news.
Ooh. All right. It's time to do that deep dive into TikTok and Instagram. So,
oh, my God.
And Kickstarter.
So. Wait, no. It's Kickstarters for the next segment.
Okay, well, we do mind. This one all wrapped in one. Anyway, whatever. Let's talk about them.
Sounds good.
And since we know nothing about it, Paula, TikTok, and she's choking on her. She's choking on her drink over there.
It's a martini.
The martini, that's what I was trying to say. I was like, for some reason, I want to say mojito, and I was like, was it a mojito?
Which would be fine as well.
Was it a mojito? Was it a margarita? What was it? So TikTok and the Instagrams, these are things we don't have any real experience with, but you have built quite the brand out of them. So do you want to talk us through sort of what you've learned, what worked, what didn't?
Yeah, I think I accidentally did this a really productive way. So I went into both TikTok and Instagram seeking to build writing community and to find readers, but it was all very community minded. And I think a lot of people go into those spaces more like audience minded and more selling minded, which isn't inherently a bad thing. But I do think people can feel that there is a little bit of a lack of authenticity that comes there. So just by happenstance, I think part of the reason it worked is that I was showing up really authentically in this space. Like, I cried on the internet a few times, and occasionally you cry on the internet and you're like, nobody's going to see that. And then like 40,000 people later, you're like, cool, awesome. But, it's not all just about crying on the internet or being emotional, but it's just about showing up to the experience. And, I showed up on TikTok before I started writing, and I shared the journey from go until where I am right now. And so I've been sharing every step of it, which I think has been something that makes people feel really connected in a different way than other social media platforms. And that was an interesting thing because I'm in a, I'm very aware of all of the things that I don't know. I can fill an ocean with the things I don't know how to do when it comes to publishing. There was a company that they run deluxe edition campaigns for Kickstarters. And I stumbled on this company and had a meeting with the founder, and it was just a really good vibe. And so I hired them to help me manage my campaign, which has, I don't know, it's paid for itself like 12 times over, because it also came with this Slack community of all of these other authors who were using this. Yeah. And it was really great. And all of them are very successful in their own rights. But I think I'm the only one who's really based on TikTok and Instagram. And it was interesting to see the way that translated when it came time to do sales, because I think that parasocial relationship is a lot stronger on the video-based apps than it is mm-hmm. on the text and photo-based apps. And so seeing the way that played out was, you know, it wasn't necessarily intentional on my part. It was just like what resonated with me most. But it also, I think there's something to be said for the results of that, that like mm-hmm. being able to show up in that way and create community in that way also translates to people who are more willing to buy your book. And like, let me be clear, I'm a debut author. These people are putting their trust in me. Like they've read two chapters of my work. Mm-hmm. This book could suck ass. It could really suck.
I'm confident it does not.
I am too, but also like they are not, they don't know that, but they feel confident in that as well, because we've built a stronger sense of, they feel a stronger sense of relationship with me mm-hmm. than they would on other platforms. And I think that has made a huge difference. And it's one of the reasons I'm always like, we met at World Fantasy Con this year in Kansas mm-hmm. City. And I feel like I told everyone I could get a word in about it. Like, hey, you should really get on TikTok. It's super great. It's such a ton of fun. Because I just think I think those video platforms, if you're willing to be present and vulnerable and authentic about your journey, mm-hmm. are a really unique space to find an audience for your book.
Very cool.
That's not really like a how-to or anything. It's more just like a waxing poetic or not so poetic about why I think it's great and why it works. But
no, I think you hit the important how-to in there, right? And I think that's true across all social media. I mean, if you think about like what you see on social media is like Twitter X, people go in and they're like, oh, I got to promote my book. So they create an account, they follow some things they like, and then they tweet into the void, buy my book. Hey, my book's 99 cents. Buy my book. Have you read my book? And no one cares at all, right? It's like you have to figure out how to be authentic and engage with people on each of them, right? So like Twitter or Blue Sky, if you want to build a community on there or interact, it's sort of the same thing, right? You have to go find people who are real people talking about things and engage with them and slowly build something over time. On Facebook, you just, that's not for building community. That's for keeping track of your aunt's cat pictures.
You know? I know some authors seem to have a lot of success there and to really enjoy it, but that's not been a place where I've been able to get footing. And different things work for different people, but it was fascinating to see compared to even like there's a guy in the Slack group who's got a really big following on YouTube and regularly gets, you know, 40,000 views a video, 100,000 mm-hmm. views a video. And there are people with 11,000, 12,000 people deep email lists. Mm-hmm. And the fact that follow to actually making the purchase rate was as high or higher in this TikTok, Instagram space was really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you found the one that you enjoy and the way that you enjoy doing it works for you.
For sure.
And I think that's probably key of all of them, right?
Yeah. There is also like just another word about like, I don't mean to just, of course, this is really weird timing to beat the TikTok drum in the United States, but it does also provide an avenue for, they should pay me, honestly. But there's TikTok Shop, which is a pretty amazing thing for authors because you can sell your books there and the merchant fee is 5%. So mm-hmm. if you're paying your author rate for a book, even if it's like the higher print rate of KDP or Ingram Spark, you're mm-hmm. only, and on top of that, you're only taking like, they're taking 5%, if you want to call it royalties, whatever, taking a 5% fee off of your sales. And they often will offer, if they offer a discount or if they offer free shipping, they cover that. And so you have this great opportunity to sell books at a lower merchant fee than you can get pretty much anywhere on the internet. And
oh, that's cool.
And a broad audience. Like I think BookTok was the most popular community on the app last year. So I just think it's an invaluable tool on a lot of different fronts. But it is weird. It's not for everybody. I can acknowledge that too.
I mean, in fairness, I still haven't figured out what social media works for me that I enjoy doing. I was able to make Twitter work for me, but I never enjoyed it, right? Honestly, my best thing has been the thing I enjoy doing the most that seems to work pretty well for me is my newsletter.
Yeah, my favorite is still Tumblr, not because of any like community, just because I have all these like witch and nature blogs. And so I get these really gorgeous like landscape pictures and I'm just like, yeah.
I love that. I guess a lot of people are like, Pinterest is kind of a rising one for folks right now. Do either of you use Pinterest to promote your books?
I haven't. I used to get on there a lot more often, but I haven't in forever. I feel like I might have put my books on there at one point, but that was like years ago.
My 11-year-old told me to do it because that's her. She's not allowed to have social media, but she's allowed to have Pinterest. And apparently a lot of people put their TikTok reels on – or their TikTok or their reels on Pinterest. So it's like her 11-year-old workaround to not being able to be on TikTok. It's an interesting one.
All right. Well – we're already here, so let's talk about Kickstarter a little bit.
Yeah.
And then I can save Creatives on Fire to be just about me.
Perfect. Wow, I love it.
So from a business standpoint for Kickstarter, so you said you went with a company that will run the campaign for you?
Yeah, which is, I don't mean it to be misleading because it's still an absolute boatload of work, no matter how you stack it. It's just that it's kind of a recognition of, I don't have expertise in all of these areas. And so I basically hired that out. And the company I used is Merrick Books, and it was amazing. And basically it ends up being, they pretty much only do, you know, $8,000 plus campaigns. And they specialize in deluxe editions. And it ultimately is 8% of your funding, your total funding amount. So you pay a deposit. And then if you don't fund, the deposit is all you've paid for the work that they've put in. If you do fund, it's 8% of the total. And I've not once looked back because for so many reasons, they helped me organize everything and help me find the right designers to like build the campaign and the community of authors and support that's there. It's just been, it was really invaluable and made the whole process a lot less. I would be a chicken without a head right now. I don't have those connections with the printers. I don't have the ins and outs and the know-hows of the print bleed margins for a half page or the end pages or what the printers can do and what they can't and what that costs. And Andrew, the guy who runs this company, I just was basically like, hey, can I add hubs on my spine? And he would tell me yes or no, which was perfect. It's like exactly what I needed.
So. Yeah, that's great. That was going to be one of my questions was, how did you figure out the printing and everything? So I didn't realize that there was a company out there that did that, right?
Yes, I did not figure out the printing. I found somebody who knew how to do that and has a personal relationship with printers and was like, yes, I will pay you to help me make this happen. And being able to be like, okay, I can pump this out. I can get the numbers in if I can find somebody else who can fill in this gap in my ability and knowledge, which is, I guess that's just the bulk of independent publishing as a whole.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we're not going to be out there trying to design our covers ourselves. Unless you're a graphic artist, you're going to find a professional to do that for you, right?
Yeah, that's not me.
It's the same thing.
It is. It is indeed. But my gosh, I don't even know what all the depth of what all of the Kickstarter entails is so wide. The depth of it is wide. The breadth of it is wide. Mm-hmm. It's a big thing. And I don't even know what, like at this point, because I'm so deep in it and I'm so close up to it, I don't even know what's helpful to say about it. So I don't know if you have any other questions or wondering.
Well, how is this going to work now that it's done and the books will get printed? So they're going to have the printers do it. Are they going to ship them for you or are you going to have to ship them?
Oh, that's so great. Okay. So now that the Kickstarter is done, it finished 2 weeks ago, tomorrow. And so tomorrow, after 2 weeks, they send you your funds. So they figure out which credit cards have not gone through and which have, and they send you your funds. And they also send you the information of the folks whose payment options failed. So you have an opportunity to follow up with them. And then at that point, I'll open a late backer store for a little while for anybody who missed it, if they want to like get in last minute. And we'll, one of the things I was doing as a reward is that everyone who backed the campaign gets their name in the acknowledgments of the book. And oh, so this nice. Gives us a little, yeah, I'm really excited about that. So this gives us a little time to collect the names as people want them to be listed. Or if somebody wanted to, like, I don't know, list their uncle's name or their daughter sure. or whatever, then we can collect all of those and kind of get all of our odds and ends together on the formatting side of things, get the art put in there and everything. And then we'll actually send to print in May. So that gives a little time for me to decide above the numbers of what was ordered on the Kickstarter, how many books I want to order extra. So we'll place that order. And then when it ships in probably September, it will ship to Merrick Books in Houston. And they will do fulfillment, which is
amazing.
Another really huge piece. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I of course that is like, there's the 8% is the fee to manage the Kickstarter. And then there is some kind of shipping fee, but we also included that in the price on the Kickstarter. So that's helpful to cover that as well.
No, that's a huge deal. The fulfillment's such mm-hmm. a big deal. Like I see authors like on Facebook all the time and like some of the groups I'm in and stuff. And they're like, I'm doing really successful with direct sales. Here's my setup. And it's a picture of their garage. And it's just like boxes and boxes of books. And they're like, I don't want to do any of that. Like, I did not want to be shipping a bunch of books across the country.
For sure.
No, thank you.
Yeah. I don't trust myself to be able to do that well. So I just took myself out of that.
Yeah.
But there's also the other great thing is that I wanted to sign all of the books that are getting sent out from the Kickstarter. And I'm obviously not in Houston. And so I was like, mm-hmm. hey, I could come down there and have a fun signing day. We can hang out and have some pizza. And Andrew was like, no, actually, you don't have to do that. We'll do tip-in sheets. Which is the printer will send me a big batch yeah. of the pages that I'll sign. I'll sign them, send them back, and they'll right into the book, which I didn't know what that was. So I thought I'd cover that for anybody who.
No, I don't think a lot of people know that. That's a good shout. I don't think many people would probably know what that is.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool feature.
But you got my wheels turning now because I'm thinking like I might have to be a late backer because there's a name I would love to get written in stone in your book.
I love that that is the reason for to get it.
Why do I get a bad feeling about this?
It's for you, Jamiroquai Hobbiton the Third. That's what the JH. That's smacking my keyboard. That's what the J and the H
is for. Stands for. It's not what it stands Hobbiton. For.
But that is so nice,
isn't it?
That's a lovely name. The Third, too. My goodness, the lineage.
Just wait till I use that in a book.
Oh my gosh.
Jamiroquai Hobbiton.
At some point there will be a Jamiroquai Hobbiton in one of my books. I'll just drop it in there and I won't tell her I'll know when she gets to that part when she's editing it because I'll hear her cuss at me from the other room.
Hilarious. Oh, what a great skill to have writers in the house to do editing with you.
Yeah, it helps a lot. It saves a lot of mm-hmm. money on editing costs.
Oh yeah. Oh my goodness. That's amazing.
Yeah. It's
why
nice.
I'm just now having a professional editor go through one of my books because I've had him for years and I wanted to try something different with this one. So he still edited it, but now it's with someone who's been in the industry for 20 plus years. So
yeah, that's
see how
wonderful.
That goes. Yeah.
Always good to get some like foreign eyes on things.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just curious if it'll actually make a difference because like I do trust him and he's read pretty much all my other books. I think there are only a couple he's never seen, but yeah. I do like having that.
Yeah. I did find so interestingly, like from one professional editor and then I had another author that's kind of been mentoring me recently, like the different things that she and my editor saw, but that went really hand in hand. Mm-hmm. Holy cow. I mean, it was so enlightening and like helping me get past my own blind spots of I'm so mm-hmm. close into this. I can't see anything.
Right.
Yeah. It's hard to step back sometimes.
So I didn't mean to devolve into.
Oh, no, you're good.
The importance of all of that, but.
That's what we're here for. It's fine.
Yeah.
Tangents.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what podcasts are. Just a collection of tangents by people you hopefully want to listen to.
For digressions. Sure. Well, and I guess the last thing that comes to my mind on the Kickstarter is just the, for me, doing the offset print run, the different avenues that opens up for my trade editions of my book. Like, I've already been talking to especially independent bookstores who are very on board with, like, yeah, we'll buy directly from you, and you want to give us your 50% discount, which is a better discount than they're going to get from Ingram Spark, and still I get a higher payment from that because my cost to print is lower. And then my opportunity to, like, if I sell on Amazon, I don't necessarily have to go through KDP. I can sell through either the Amazon Advantage program, which is all the traditional, what the traditional publishers use, or an Amazon Pro Seller account, where I can set up a pre-order for those physical copies, which we can't do with KDP. So I'm really excited about the different doors that this opens that aren't necessarily typically available to those of us who independently publish. But then there are ways to do it. We just, you know, we have to get a little creative with it.
That is what indie publishing is all about, right?
For sure.
All right, cool. So on to Creatives on Fire?
Yeah, sure. Be on fire, man.
All right. For this week's Creatives on Fire, we're going to talk about me because I'm awesome. Okay, maybe not about me, but I have a big sort of announcement thing to make. You know, when we started the podcast, I wanted to include the Creatives on Fire section specifically, and I've mentioned this before, because for us, it was very much like a light bulb moment type thing. It's like our dream was to be full-time writers. And for years, it seemed like the only way that that was possible would be to sell a bazillion books and become Stephen King so that you could quit your job and be a full-time writer. And what the financial independence stuff taught us was actually there's not just one way to achieve our dream. There's another way too. It's slower and it takes longer and it means living below our means and it means saving a lot of money and investing and making good decisions so that maybe we don't necessarily just have to sell a bazillion books to retire and be able to write books all day. And it has come time for me to, I guess, put my money where my mouth is, so to speak. So I just gave my notice to my employer, and in a few weeks, I will be transitioning to becoming a full-time writer. And I am so in love with Paula's face right now.
I'm so excited for you. That's amazing. I'm so glad I get to be here for this. This is so great.
It is very exhilarating and nerve-wracking at the same time.
Yeah.
Which I wanted to, you know, obviously make the announcement on the podcast because we've been talking about the whole financial independence and writing thing for the whole time we've been doing this. So I wanted to say, obviously, that here's me doing it. But I also want to say from like the standpoint, here's what's cool is because I always talk about it being the second path to achieving our dreams. But the way this has actually sort of worked out is a bit of both things have happened. We've done all the pillars to some degree, right? So our living expenses are very low. That has remained true, which means I don't need as much money to live on. And the investments have grown and the savings rate has maintained where would I be fully comfortable to say I would be able to retire forever today right now? Not quite there. But on the flip side, we've kept working and I've continued writing books and learning and figuring out how to promote and sell them. And I've sold more this year than the rest of my writing career combined. So would it be quite enough for me to just quit my job and run off with it? Probably not if I didn't have all the money saved up and the investments and everything else. But The two things combined, I don't know how I cannot take a chance today.
Congratulations.
Great.
Thank you. That's huge. I don't know. Maybe early for congratulations.
Well, I guess congratulations on being brave and bold and doing the big thing. I think that is worthy of congratulations. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Ways. And yeah, for really? Sure. Another train? That was like 5 minutes ago.
It's a celebratory train in your honor.
It's a celebratory. We're leaving this one in. We're not cutting again. We're staying. We're staying with this train. And as it stands right now, JH will be joining me in how long?
Oh, I made a countdown timer for myself. I did. So you can see it. 275 days.
Oh my gosh, that's so exciting.
Yeah. So I've mentioned this before. I'm a bit of a plan freak. So I have a financial spreadsheet that tracks everything for 10 years into the future. So I know, like, I can create a copy and send you a template if you like. It does require there's a lot of manual maintenance. And if you don't like tinkering with stuff a lot, it may be a little more than what you want. But for me, it's perfect because like I can do all sorts of crazy stuff. Amazing. But I could mess with that spreadsheet for hours and be perfectly content. Let's be honest. So yeah. If that's not your jam.
Yeah, I wish it was. It's not. But I love that for you so much.
But yeah, so what that lets me do is it lets me see like, okay, if I actually want to do the exact same thing, okay, when does the money make sense? And my spreadsheet allows me to see that in real time. And any little change I make, I can then look like, okay, what does that look like 5 years down the road? Is it still good? So yeah, so I was able to figure out what day I'll be able to do the same. And yeah, so long as things continue or get better than they are right now, I am also good to go.
You guys are so inspiring. This is really incredible.
Oh, thank you. It's awesome. Sort of scary. It's also very exciting. Yeah. It is all of the things.
I think that's the special combination there. If something is not both a little bit scary and also exciting, then it's not the really good stuff.
Right. I agree.
Yeah, and I think we've got a really good plan, right? And I think that's part of what's really important is like we've got a really good plan on how we'll be drawing down from what we've saved and invested, right? And we've got a really good plan on how to control our spending and make sure that we don't draw down more than we're supposed to. And we have a really good plan for our business and how to continue growing it, you know?
Right.
So wise.
So hopefully it pays off for us. If not, we're not prepared to blow everything that we've grown and saved over the years, right? There is a cutoff point where we go, all right, well, maybe we'll do the job again. You know, right after I gave my notice, someone I spoke to was like, would you consider working 2 days a week? And I was like, I would probably consider that. Yes. So, you know, there still might be other things. And like one of JH's jobs she loves and she's never going to give up so long as she can help it, right? She'd probably do it for free. So.
Well, how nice that you don't have to.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that one I've talked about. Yes, that one I've talked about before. So it's no secret. I'm an administrative assistant to a literary agent and I absolutely love that job so much. And I will stay as long as she wants me. Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds very cool. Yeah, because you get to be all up in it.
Yeah, that's been really neat because I get to see kind of the other side of it with like, you know, her emails back and forth with, you know, publishers and editors and whatnot and her submission process and what that looks like once you're submitting to the Big Five and everyone else. So, yeah, it's been really interesting. And I was going to add what Phil was saying was if something happens, like the worst case scenario where we have to get jobs again, like all of my best jobs, I have actually gotten through temp agencies where they place me with somewhere and I may start off like just filing stuff. I don't care. And it's like I can do that part time and write the rest of the time. I'm totally cool with that.
Yeah. Save your mental creative energy for the stuff you really love.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, we've gone for almost basically the whole time that she and I have been together. I think we figured out like, so just a little bit of our villain origin story from the finance side, I guess, is I had a corporate job with the same company for like 12 years. And, you know, I'd promoted a few times and stuff, but I'd always been in the same area. And I worked for the same guy, was like my senior boss for that whole time. And I loved him to death. I still do, still talk to him. He'd been with that company for like 38 years. He was on his 38th year. And I woke up one morning from a call from his boss that said, hey, I need you to get the guys together. He's been let go. And it wasn't performance or anything. It was just the fact that he had been there so long, he was at the top of his pay band, right? And so they're like, we need to save money, get rid of that guy. And that was like very wrong. It felt very wrong. And it felt like, oh, this could happen to me at any time. So that I think when that happened, she and I had just got together and I was like, I have to live differently. Like I have to start like no debt, save as much as possible. That way, when I get fired for running my mouth or whatever, I could just take a run at writing, you know? And then as we started that, it kind of led down the path of like, all right, well, I got some savings built up. Now, how do I like actually invest money? So we started learning that. And over the years, we've just been very, very, you know, like we obviously we went to World Fantasy. We go to lots of conventions. We go lots of places. But on a, like a day-to-day, we keep our living expenses very low. Like both our cars are paid off. The next time we have to buy cars, we'll probably just buy them outright without loans. And that's just what we've done for years. So even like, you know, when she said like worst case scenario, we've got a nice long runway and then a cutoff point where we would go, okay, we don't want to completely draw down everything. So let's, you know, let's switch gears. But at the same time, our living expenses are low enough that the drawdown we're going to do, assuming the stock market doesn't have like a huge crash or something right away, should actually, our drawdown should actually replenish itself year in, year over year.
Right. It should keep growing faster than we're using it.
Yeah.
That's so great. Yeah. And it sounds like you're really poised at this moment mm-hmm. to look in that important window of if you don't try, you'll never know.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And so you may as well. You don't have a reason not to.
Yeah, 100%. Even my boss was like, you know, I knew we were going to have this conversation at some point, but I thought it was like 3 or 4 years from now. And I was like, I thought the same, but those stars, they're aligning.
Yeah. Good on you for listening.
So we got to go for it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's wonderful.
You know, JH is the data geek normally, but I have annoyed her to death and my sister and my father and a few others with, let's go through these numbers one more time. Go through everything with me.
Annoyed me with that.
What am I missing? What am I not accounting for? You know, so.
Let's be clear. Yeah. You have not annoyed me with that.
I know. Data geek.
I wish I was. I think that's a great skill to have.
The funny thing is I was like, all right, well, that was yesterday morning, right? So yesterday morning I did that and I was like, all right, well, brave new world. We can't afford to go out and eat and stuff anymore. And we've gone out to eat both the last two nights because somebody else was like, oh, well, if you're doing that, yeah. Let me buy you dinner.
Right. Yeah. We didn't pay for either time. So.
Hey, nice. That's a good way to do it. I need to figure that system out.
Apparently just tell people you're retiring to go right full time. And then they're like, oh, I'll feed you. It's fine. I'll feed you starving artist. Speaking of which, JH did want me to share my conversation with real life Axel.
Oh, jeez.
Paula, real life. In my most popular book series, there's a character named Axel, and he is based off of one of my best friends in real life. So occasionally we mention real life Axel on the podcast.
Ooh. Is real life Axel named Axel or is you just call him real life Axel?
It's actually Alex. In real life, it's Alex. Oh, nice. I just named his character Axel.
I'll pretend we're not sharing that with everyone who listens to us.
Right. So I texted him and let him know about this and everything, right? And then blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to read the whole chain, but he said... And Jess works like 17 jobs, so you could actually just be a trophy husband if you wanted. Know your worth, King. To which I replied, yeah, I'll let her know you suggested that. To which he replied, and I'm not making this up, she better take care of my boo thing.
Friend.
Yeah.
So good.
He's a different kind of person.
No wonder he has a character.
Yeah.
He really is. Yeah, it's hilarious to me because I think there was – didn't you have a reviewer like call you out on the character in the book about it like being exaggerated or making fun of someone or whatever? And he's like, it's literally – one of his best friends.
They were like, it is a real person. Like, this character is so unrealistic, they could never exist. And I had a problem with that. And I was like, oh boy, I wish I could take you to meet him.
You were like, I need to switch the L and the X. He's real.
Exactly.
Yep, he is 100% real and just as ridiculous.
Yeah, some of the quotes and things are actually from him in real life.
God, I love that. So,
yeah. It's good. And he listens to the podcast, so he'll be so excited to know we're talking about him. He'll get another text.
Hello, real life, Axel.
He actually, last year, we went to one of our conventions, and it was like a 3-hour drive away. And we woke up on Saturday morning to a picture. He goes, I did a thing. And he sends me a picture of himself standing in front of the hotel with his thumbs up.
He had the hotel in the background. He was pointing up and like grinning all mischievously, like, ee. Yeah, he was waiting outside for us that morning.
That's so fun. That is too fun. I'm really happy for you.
Thank you. I'm very excited. I think it's going to be, and I know here's the thing too, and some people might be like, that jerk doing that before JH. What people need to understand is starting about 5 years ago. Yeah, probably about 5 years ago, she's been trying to get me to leave my corporate life because she does not like the impact it has on me. So she is very much behind this move.
Right.
That's the best kind of partnership. That's what you want.
Right. Yeah. And I would totally go at the same time if I could. But again, I have this magical spreadsheet that tells me it's not time yet. So I will wait till it is time.
If the magical spreadsheet says, wait a minute, yes. You'll wait a minute.
Right. Right?
Where I'm just like Leroy Jenkins over here all the time with everything. Like,
I don't know. I am for most things. I have been planning this very carefully for a long time.
It's so smart.
Otherwise, the rest of the time, I'm just like, woohoo, yeah. Whatever. So, yeah, I guess we'll find out if the wisdom we've shared on the podcast, both around writing and finances, is we'll find out if it's true or not, right?
Yeah, you got this.
So, I think so. All right. Well, Paula, tell the people where to find you.
Primarily, you can find me on TikTok.
What? Why didn't you mention that?
Shocking.
You could have told us that from the start.
I got to open my phone to make sure I tell you my correct handle. So I was not prepared. My name on TikTok is just Paula Lafferty. And then on
with
Instagram,
an A?
I'm with an A. Yeah, with an
Paula,
A.
Paula.
Not Paula. Yeah.
And then on Instagram, I'm Paula Lafferty Writes. And if you can't remember that, you can go to paulalafferty.com, which is currently a mostly empty website, but it does have links to the appointments.
She'll
get you through.
There you go.
Very nice. And if you, like she said, if you missed out on this cool Kickstarter, which you should definitely go look at, it looks absolutely beautiful. The book looks amazing. You should go check it out. And she's going to do that late backer thing, right?
Yeah, it should be open when this airs. So I don't know, maybe send you guys a link. If you want to put it in a little comedy comment thing, you sure could.
I can put it in a little comedy comment thing for sure.
That'd be awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. And then also if you miss out on that for some reason, she will have it on the Zon soon as well, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's up on Kindle, on the Zon, and then paperback and hardcover editions will be up in a couple weeks too. So.
Very nice.
Yeah.
All right. Jamiroquai Hobbiton III Fleming.
I'm going to punch you.
What a treat. I love this window into you guys.
Well, so you can find me at jhfleming.net. I'm on pretty much all the social media as JH Fleming. You can also find me on Fiverr if you need an editor, also as JH Fleming on there. You can find my band, Wildwood Minstrels, on all the music sites. And in person, our next event will be the Ren Fair in Muskogee, Oklahoma, and then SoonerCon in Oklahoma City. Yeah.
I need to go to Oklahoma.
You do. Yeah. Yes, you should come to SoonerCon. It's very good.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very good convention. And I am Chimney Cakes. No, I want Chimney Cakes. I am Philip Dreyer Duncan, philipdreyerduncan.com. And the latest book in the Blade Mage series has just released. It's called Rebel Medicine. So if you haven't got a copy, you might want to do that. And you can experience some not real life Axel, some fiction Axel. Yeah, that's the one. All right. This has been another episode, Future Bestseller. Paula, thank you so much.
Yes, oh, you guys, you. Thank you for having me. This was so much fun.
Yeah, it was a delight to have you. Thank you. Very excited for you about the book and the Kickstarter that you absolutely destroyed. It's amazing.
Thanks so much.
All right. Bye, everyone.